The first major section in Acts closes when Stephen becomes the first martyr for the sake of the gospel. Stephen, one of the seven deacons, was wrongly accused of blasphemy and brought before the Sanhedrin. But rather than defending himself against the charges made against him, Stephen gave a defense of Christianity as the one and only way of worshiping God, and was eventually stoned to death. We see in verses 1 through 53, now we're not going to get that far this morning, but we see in verses 1 through 53 Stephen's defense before the Sanhedrin. In verse 1, the high priest inquired of Stephen if the accusations made against him in 6:13 through 14 were true. And Stephen would proceed to demonstrate that the temple in Jerusalem was not the only place God could be worshipped. The Jews had worshipped God long before the temple was built. Although scholars differ on the date of Abraham's birth, inasmuch as Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran, he could not have entered the land of Canaan too many years after 2100 BC. And he had worshipped God in Mesopotamia, that's the area between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, before he went to Haran. By contrast, the temple was not built until the reign of Solomon, who reigned from about 970 to 931 BC, which means that it was more than 1,000 years after Abraham had worshipped God in Haran. The temple wasn't the only place where God could be worshipped. Stephen began his defense with a reminder of Abraham and the promises God made to him. We looked at most of that last week. Before reminding them of Joseph, of Jacob's move to Egypt, of his burial in Shechem, and of later developments in Egypt, including the birth of Moses. Moses, at age 40, and his flight into the land of Midian are seen in 7:23 through 29. As we move on into verse 8, we see circumcision and the births of Isaac, Jacob, and the 12 patriarchs. Verse 8 introduces circumcision and the births of Isaac, Jacob, and the 12 patriarchs. And he, meaning God, gave him, meaning Isaac, the covenant of circumcision. Excuse me, that would be Abraham. He gave Abraham the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham begat Isaac and circumcised him the eighth day. And Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. Now you'll notice that begat in the last line of that verse is in italics, which indicates that the translators have supplied it because it was implied in the context. They might also instead have supplied begat and circumcised, which is from this context. He gave him means that God gave to Abraham, and what he gave him is the covenant of circumcision, which is the covenant or the ordinance or the decree of circumcision. Circumcision was the sign of the unconditional covenant God made with Abraham. The covenant of circumcision means that the covenant is the ordinance or decree. It is the covenant which is circumcision. And its reference is Genesis 17, 1 through 10, which I have printed for you. And when Abram was 90 years old and 9, You know, that doesn't look too old when you compare that he lived till he was 176. It's looking younger all the time to two or three of us. The Lord appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be thou perfect. You know, that's good advice for all of us, isn't it? Be thou perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and thee and will multiply thee exceedingly. Remember, he's 99 years old and he's childless. But God's going to multiply him exceedingly. And Abram fell on his face and God talked with him saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with thee. And thou, you, Abraham, will be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name be any more be called Abram, but thy name shall be Abraham. For a father of many nations have I made thee, and I will make thee exceeding fruitful. And I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee, and I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said unto Abraham, thou shalt keep my covenant, therefore, thou and thy seed after thee in their generations. This is my covenant which ye shall keep between you and me, I guess it's between me and you, and thy seed after thee. Every man child among you shall be circumcised. And introduces what Abraham did as a result of giving him the covenant of circumcision, meaning the covenant which is circumcision. You see, circumcision identified the Jews as God's chosen people. So is understood in the sense of hence. As indicated by the italics, Abraham has been supplied by the translators to aid the understanding of the English reader. And you and I are the English readers, right? Yes, we are. He begat Isaac means he became the father of Isaac and circumcised him the eighth day in accordance with God's instructions. Genesis 17, 11 and 12 says, and ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. And he that is 8 days old shall be circumcised among you, every man child in your generations. He that is born in the house or bought with money of any stranger, which is not of thy seed. And Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. The translators have twice supplied begat to aid the understanding of the English reader. As I've said already, they might instead have supplied begat and circumcised, both of which are true and both of which fit the context. Who are these 12 patriarchs? They are the 12 sons of Jacob. As we move into verse 9, we see Joseph in Egypt. But before we get into that, let me assure you of something. Joseph's getting to Egypt was in the perfect will of God. He was doing what he was supposed to be doing within the will of God, and his brothers sold him into slavery, which was the will of God for Joseph. You see, God was sending him to Egypt so that he would eventually use him there in Egypt within his will. Verses 9 through 16, Stephen deals with Joseph in Egypt. Verse 9 indicates what his brothers did with him, but indicates that God was with him all the way. That you may think strange, but that's what the text says and that's what it means. And the patriarchs moved with envy. That's the 11 brothers. I guess it's only 10. Benjamin would not have been involved. Sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him. Don't forget that phrase. The patriarchs refer to the sons of Jacob, not including Joseph or Benjamin in this verse. The fathers of the Jewish nation moved with envy, which suggests filled with jealousy, is used in conjunction with sold, and its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of sold. It is understood in the sense of because they were or had been filled with envy or jealousy, or in the sense of they were or they had been filled with envy or jealousy. Now, they weren't right in that, but God allowed it and God used it to get Joseph to Egypt where he wanted him. Sold or traded Joseph into Egypt summarizes Joseph's being taken to Egypt when Joseph was approximately 17 years of age. His brothers sold him to some Midianites who were on their way to Egypt, and they in turn sold him to Potiphar. Now, do you suppose that Joseph recognized that this was God's will for him at this time in his life? And my guess is highly doubtful. Sold or traded. We read about it in Genesis 37, 26 and 27 and 28. And Judah said unto his brethren, "What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brethren were content. Then there passed by Midianites merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. And then you go down and you see verse 36. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. Now we go back to Acts 7:9. But is the word ordinarily translated "and"? Here it's used to introduce a contrast. God was with him means that God never left Joseph alone in Egypt. God protected him throughout his years in Egypt, directing him every step of the way, including his being falsely accused by Potiphar's wife and his years of imprisonment. We must remind ourselves that at that time, Joseph was in the center of God's will for his life. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? In verse 10, Stephen continues his statement before the Sanhedrin, indicating how God was with Joseph and delivered him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he made him governor over Egypt and all his house. But there are about 13 years in there from the time he was sold into slavery until he became the prominent individual in Egypt running that country except for Pharaoh. So what was he doing those 13 years? Learning lots of lessons that God had for him to learn. So what are we doing? We're learning lessons that God has for us to learn too. Whether you're under 10 or whether you're over 50. How's that? You like that one? Over 50. I like that. I haven't seen 50 in a long time, but I do like that. I like to pretend to be young for your benefit. I don't really pretend it when it comes to working physically. He delivered him, suggests that God set Joseph free or rescued him. Out of all his afflictions indicates that Joseph was experiencing or enduring afflictions, meaning his distresses, his oppressions, or his tribulations. Have you been through a few of those distresses or tribulations in your life? The older you are, the more you have gone through. And he gave him, means God gave Joseph favor and wisdom. Favor is grace. In the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, indicates where God gave Joseph favor and wisdom. In the sight of, suggests before. Pharaoh concluded that there was something special about Joseph. Now, why do you suppose he concluded that? You suppose God directed Pharaoh to think that? Of course he did. And he, meaning Pharaoh, made him, meaning made Joseph governor, ruler or leader over the nation of Egypt and over all his house, which is a reference to Pharaoh's own house and what was in it, all of Pharaoh's property, possessions, and estate. Verse 11 indicates that a famine came upon all the land of Egypt and Canaan, and that the 11 sons of Jacob had no food. We've never experienced that in our country like this, where people nowhere had any food. We can always go over to the grocery store, right, and get plenty. Well, yes, if we have the money to pay for it, especially in these inflationary times. Now there came a dearth over all the land of Egypt and Canaan, and great affliction, and our fathers found no sustenance. Now is the translation of a transition word, which is often translated, and now, but, or then. It continues the thought, but takes it in a slightly different direction. There came a dearth over all the land of Egypt and Canaan. Who sent this dearth? God did. And why did he do it? Because he wanted Israel to be down in Egypt for a while. A dearth is a famine. The famine was widespread, covering the lands of Egypt and Canaan. And great affliction also came over all the land of Egypt and Canaan. Affliction speaks of trouble that inflicts distress in the sense of tribulation. The result of this famine, as far as Jacob's family is concerned, is indicated by, and our fathers found no sustenance. Sustenance is food. By our fathers, Stephen means the 11 sons of Jacob. The tense of found indicates continuing or repeated action in past time, and it's understood in the sense of were finding or repeatedly found no food. It was an ongoing situation. Verse 12 indicates that Jacob sent his sons to Egypt because he heard that grain was available in Egypt. Well, now, why do you suppose he heard that? Because God directed him to hear that. Why do you hear certain things? Because God has a way of letting you know what you need to know at the time you need to know it. But when Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first. But it should be noted that Benjamin was not sent to Egypt at this time, so he just sent the 10 brothers. But is the same term translated now in the previous verse. It's often translated but, and, now, or then, and it's used to transition from one statement to another. It's frequently used. As we move on, we see when he heard. It's understood in the sense in conjunction with sent, and its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of sent. It has been translated as indicating time in the sense of having heard or after he heard. It may instead be understood in the sense of because since, in as much as, or in view of the fact that he heard. Anyway, he heard, and as a result, his sons are on their way to Egypt as soon as they can get going. In the Greek text, Jacob functions as the subject of sent. Here he is, an older man with sons. By this time, Joseph, the second youngest, was 39. So how old was Jacob? I don't know. I suppose I could find that out if I really looked at it, but I haven't checked it out. But he's not young. But you notice he's still directing the family. So here I am. Am I still directing my family? No, they couldn't wait to get away from me and start their own families. Even Jesse's dad is no longer directing Jesse. Jesse's directing Ashley. At least I think it's that way, not the other way around. I'm picking on him. I know good and well the way it is, as you would understand. He's seen directing the family affairs, even though all his sons were older than Joseph, who at this time was approximately 39 years of age. When Joseph was sold into slavery, he was at least 17 years of age. We saw that in Genesis 37, too. These are the generations of Jacob. Jacob, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. You suppose he told the truth? Well, of course he did. Did they like it? Absolutely not. They didn't want Dad to know what wicked stuff they were doing. But there's no indication here of how much time elapsed between the event of Genesis 37:2, where Joseph was said to be 17 years old, and Genesis 37:27 through 28, where his brothers sold him into slavery. But it does not appear to be too long between these two events. Genesis 37:27 and 28 say, "Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brethren were content. And as we've already read verse 28, they sold Joseph to the Midianites, merchant men, and they got 20 pieces of silver. Sounds like two apiece, doesn't it? And they brought Joseph into Egypt. When Joseph stood before Pharaoh and told him the interpretation of Pharaoh's dream, Joseph was 30 years of age. So 13 years has passed. And where's Joseph been? Well, he was in Potiphar's house for a while. And after that, he was in prison for a while, quite a while. Genesis 41:46, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt, following 7 years of plenty and 2 years of famine. Joseph made himself known to his brethren. At this time, he would have been 39 years of age. Genesis 45:6 indicates, "For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall be neither earing or plowing nor harvest." I would never have guessed the derivation of plowing to be earing, but that's what it means. Earing is plowing. My farmers in Illinois did a lot of earing. Okay, they plowed every year, lots of times the same fields, as you would know. When Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt, the length of time from the beginning of the famine in Egypt until Jacob heard of the availability of corn in Egypt is not clear. Remember that God was the one who caused Jacob to hear this. Everything was moving right on schedule in accordance with the will of God. You know, as I look back at my life, while I was going through many things, it didn't seem like they were particularly well connected. But I look back and it's a straight line, and they were all connected exactly as God intended them to be. And if you'll think about that, you can look back and see something very similar, most likely. Anyway, in case you wondered what corn is, it's not what you find in this country. All right, it's grain. It's grain. Often it's wheat, but typically it's just grain. Corn is wheat, but it's often used of grain in general. He, Jacob, sent our fathers out first, refers to Jacob sending his 10 oldest sons from Canaan to Egypt without Benjamin for the purpose of purchasing grain. First refers to the first time Jacob sent his sons to Egypt. Verse 13 indicates that on the second trip to Egypt to purchase grain, this time when Benjamin accompanied Joseph's brothers, Joseph revealed himself to his brothers and subsequently made them known to Pharaoh. Can you imagine the looks on the brothers' faces when Joseph told them who he was? I'm sure it would have been classic. The second, here he is, except for Pharaoh, he's head honcho in all of Egypt. He had the power of life or death over his brothers. They knew it. The second time Joseph was made known to his brother, Joseph's kindred was also made known unto Pharaoh. At the first trip, Joseph's brothers went to Egypt. After that trip, Simeon was held captive in Egypt to ensure that Benjamin would be brought with the brothers on their next trip. And at the second time refers to the second visit to Egypt to procure grain. This time Joseph's 10 brothers were accompanied by Benjamin. Joseph was made known to his brethren as Joseph made himself known. And Joseph's kindred was made known unto Pharaoh indicates something else that occurred. Kindred were a relatively small group with a common ancestry in the sense of family or relatives, was made known, as became known or clear. Prior to this visit, Pharaoh had not known Joseph's brothers, but now he did. Verse 14 indicates that Joseph summoned his father and all his family to come to Egypt, then sent Joseph and called his father Jacob to him and all his kindred, 75 souls. Then's the same word translated and in verse 6, now in verse 11, but in verse 12, so in verse 15. Again, it's marking a transition to the narrative. Sent is understood with called, and its tense indicates that its action occurred at the same time as the action of called. It has been translated as indicating a fact in addition to called. He sent and called his father. In the Greek text, Joseph is the subject of called. He called himself to himself or summoned him. Those summoned were his father Jacob and all his kindred, which refers to an extended family relationship. The relatives, the whole family, every Israelite came. 75 souls is literally 75, where souls represents persons. The number is listed in Genesis 46, 27 as 70. Is there a contradiction here? No, the Bible has no contradictions. There are only apparent contradictions. But with further information, they all dissolve. There is no such thing as a genuine contradiction in the scriptures. Ryrie indicates that the 75 includes the son and grandson of Manasseh, as well as two sons and a grandson of Ephraim, but they're not included in the number 70 who came to Egypt from Canaan. Verse 15 indicates that Jacob and his sons went to Egypt, where they eventually died. So Jacob went down into Egypt and died, he and our fathers. So is used to transition. We've seen this word before. Jacob went down into Egypt, indicates that he left Canaan and died, which happens to people typically. He died. He was an older man and indicates something which eventually occurred in Jacob's life. He and our fathers indicates that Jacob and all his sons all went down into Egypt and all of them died in Egypt. Verse 16 indicates that after their deaths, the bodies of Jacob and his sons were carried to Shechem, where they were buried in the sepulcher Abraham had purchased from Hamor, and were carried over into Shechem, that's Shechem, and laid in the sepulcher that Abraham bought for a sum of money of the sons of Emor, or Hamor, the father of Shechem, or Shechem. Were carried and were laid are two plural verbs indicating that the bodies of Jacob's sons were carried to Shechem, where they were buried following their deaths. Jacob's body was buried in the cave of Machpelah in Hebron, which was about 76 miles from Shechem. This was not reported of Joseph's brothers in the Old Testament, but it's reported here in Acts 7, 16. Were carried indicates that their bodies, of course they were dead bodies, were carried from one place to another, transferred or brought back into Shechem or into Shechem, and laid. They were laid or put in the sepulcher, meaning in the grave or tomb, that Abraham bought for a sum of money, which Abraham bought for a price of silver or silver money, of, meaning from, the sons of Emor or Hamor. The differences in spelling come because of the difference between Hebrew and Greek. The names were originally in Hebrew. They were then translated into Greek, and our translators translated them from the Greek. So that's why there's a slight difference in the spelling of some of them. The father of Shechem is the father of Shechem. The father of has been placed in italics. Again, these all indicate always that these words are supplied by the translators in order to aid the understanding of the English readers. They didn't want people thinking that they had added to the scriptures, so they put the words they put in there in italics. Now, they're typically implied in the context, but that means there's no Hebrew or Greek word representing those italicized words in the actual Hebrew or Greek manuscripts. There is an apparent discrepancy. Note the word apparent. In verse 16, it's not an actual discrepancy. Stanley Toussaint has well stated in the Bible Knowledge Commentary, Stephen's words imply that Jacob was buried at Shechem, whereas the Old Testament clearly affirms that he and his wife Leah and his parents Isaac and Rebekah and his grandparents Abraham and Sarah were interred in the cave of Machpelah at Hebron. However, the bodies buried at Shechem did not include Jacob, but did include those of Joseph and his brothers. Joseph had been buried first in Egypt, but was reburied in Shechem. True, Joshua 24:32 refers only to Joseph's bones, but evidently his brothers were also buried at Shechem. The pronoun there does not go back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but looks farther back to the words our fathers in verse 15 and refers to Joseph and his brothers. I know that's a grammatical lesson, and I know that grammar was not necessarily your first love in life, especially when you were in high school. But if you will remember, pronouns have antecedents, and you have to figure out while you're studying what the antecedent of the pronoun is, meaning what that pronoun is representing, okay? So much for your language lesson this morning. Remember, I'm a Greek professor, and so I do indeed get too technical sometimes with the language. I hope you'll forgive me for that. If that's the worst thing I do, so be it. Actually, Jacob, not Abraham, bought the plot of ground, according to Genesis 33:19. This may be explained by saying that Abraham, in a sense, did purchase the property in the person of his grandson. Abraham would be given title to Shechem through Jacob. Well, enough of that. Let's go on into verses 17 through 43, but we won't go that far. In verses 17 through 43, we see Stephen dealing with God's deliverance of the Israelites from Egypt under the leadership of Moses. According to verse 17, the number of Israelites increased dramatically when God's promise to Abraham was about to be fulfilled. But when the time of the promise drew nigh or drew near, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt. But, is this transitional word, here it's translated indicating a mild contrast. When is an indication of time. The time of the promise which God had sworn to Abraham refers to the promise mentioned by Stephen in Acts 7:6-7, which says, "And God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land," that's Egypt, "and that they should bring them into bondage," which they did, they enslaved them, "and entreat them evil 400 years. The Israelites were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. Do you suppose that today's Israelites would get reparations for that? I doubt it, okay? That seems to be a later development. 400 years. How old is the United States of America? Not nearly 400 years. Quite a few less. "And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God. And after that they shall come forth and serve me in this place." Where is this place? Mount Sinai, where the law was given. The time of the promise suggests the time when the promise would be fulfilled, which God had sworn to Abraham, is which God swore to Abraham, and where had sworn's been translated in a way which emphasizes the result of its action. Do you suppose 400 years of slavery in Egypt was the will of God for his people Israel? Yes, it was. Is it what you or I might have done? Probably not. But that's what God did. Drew near, as was drawing or coming near or was approaching. As the time got closer, the people, referring to the descendants of Jacob, grew, suggests became greater or increased in number and multiplied. They were caused to become greater in number. They were grown, were multiplied, or were increased. And its passive voice indicates that God caused this increase in number. Of course he did. In Egypt indicates where they were caused to increase in number. And verse 18 indicates that the number of Israelites was increasing until a king who did not know Joseph came to power. Till another king arose which knew not Joseph. Now this is getting towards 350 to 400 years later. So, you know, you can understand why he wouldn't know Joseph. Till is until the time when. Another king is another king of a different kind. Why is he another king of a different kind? And I'm not sure that we know the answer to that. The identity of this other king is not known. Arose or rose up suggests that the other individual became king or came to power, which knew not Joseph, is who had no information about Joseph or who did not know about Joseph. Doesn't matter whether he knew about Joseph, God knew about him. According to verse 19, this wicked king attempted to control the population of the Jews by having the infants killed. Suppose that was satanic? Of course it was. You suppose what our country has done with the murder of unwanted babies? Suppose it's pleasing to God? Oh no. The same dealt subtly with our kindred, and evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children to the end they might not live. Can you imagine having to take your brand new baby, especially baby boy, and abandon him so that he would die? Must have been awful for those mothers and dads. The same is this one, or he, and refers to the king in verse 18 who came to power, who knew nothing about Joseph. Dealt subtly with is understood in conjunction with evil entreated. And its tense indicates that its action occurred at the same time as or before the action of evil entreated. And it's been translated as indicating a fact into, in addition to evil entreated. Dealt subtly means got the better of, took advantage of by cunning or by trickery. Our kindred speaks of a relatively large people group in the sense of our nation or our people, and refers to the Jewish nation which was in bondage in Egypt. Our refers to Stephen, as well as to the Jewish leaders in the Sanhedrin to whom he was giving his defense. And evil entreated means caused harm, harmed or mistreated. The ones he evil entreated were our fathers. And again, our refers to Stephen and the Sanhedrin whom he was addressing. Our fathers suggests our ancestors or our forefathers. He dealt subtly with cunning. You don't want this child because you can't take care of him. You don't want this child because it's the wrong gender. You don't want this child because you don't want to be a mommy. Where did we come up with all these satanic ideas? I think I just suggested it, didn't I? Praise God for our children. They're a blessing. We're privileged to have some of our children in our church today, so that they cast out their young children. Young, it's understood as undertaking or doing something which brings about something else in the sense of caused or brought it about, that their very young children, their infants or their babies, were exposed or abandoned to the end that they might not live, indicates the purpose or intended result for which the babies were abandoned. Do you suppose the mommies had regrets about their children being abandoned? Do you suppose mommies that go through abortions have regrets later on in life? It is in order that, or so that they not remain alive, that they may not be kept alive, or that they might not be preserved alive. It indicates that the Egyptian king was trying to control the Jewish population growth by having the babies killed. Oh, we've got overcrowding. We can't afford to have all these babies. Who says? God doesn't say that. Be fruitful and multiply. And that's more than 2.2 children per family, probably. Okay, you can do what you want about that. We're happy to have had what the Lord gave us. In which time Moses was born and was exceeding fair and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. You suppose they had a problem keeping him quiet, not squawking when he was hungry or needed to be changed? In which time Moses was born refers to the time when the Egyptian king caused the Jewish babies to be abandoned in order that they might die. The time and circumstances surrounding Moses' birth were all within the will of God. When were you born? At the exact moment of God's choosing, to the parents of God's choosing, in the circumstances of God's choosing. We had no choice. You do know God didn't bother to consult us if that's what we would like. No, he didn't bother, did he? You may not like what you were brought up in. Well, do what you can to change it, but you can't change that heritage. That's where you came from. I was born on the day of God's choosing, so I'm just right in the center of God's will as far as my age is concerned. So don't call me old. I'm mature, okay? I've been mature for 2 or 3 weeks now. At least I try to be. Sometimes some people think maybe I'm a little childish. Anyway, Moses was exceeding fair, handsome, well-bred, well-pleasing, or beautiful to God. You don't see it in the English, but in the Greek text of Acts 7:20, the words "to God" appear, and they form the basis for the use of the word "exceeding." Although the Egyptians would look down upon his birth as that of another shepherd, God viewed him, meaning Moses, as a chosen vessel to eventually shepherd his people, Israel. What does God have in mind for you as an individual? Don't go by what the politicians say. Ask God what he has in mind for you. In his father's house indicates where Moses was nurtured, but it was limited to 3 months. Months has been placed in a position of emphasis in the Greek text, which reads literally, "who was brought up throughout 3 months in the house of his father." 3 months indicates the extent of time Moses was nurtured in his father's home. He didn't have any choice about that. God directed it. According to Exodus 6:20, the name of Moses' father was Amram. So if you're looking for a new name one of these days, there's one you might choose. It's a biblical name, by the way. Verse 21 indicates that after Moses' mother placed him in a papyrus basket and set it, meaning the basket, in the reeds by the bank of the Nile River, Pharaoh's daughter found him and raised him as her own son. Interesting. She just happened to find him. Or did God happen to direct her to find him? Anyway, when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. One of the nice things about that was nobody's going to kill Pharaoh's daughter's son. One of the other nice things about it is that she wasn't able to nurse the baby, so she had to go out and find a nurse, just happened to get the baby's mama. What a blessing that would have been to Mrs. Amram. And when he was cast out, where he's the baby, it's understood in conjunction with "took up," and its tense indicates that its action occurred before the action of "took up." It's used of withdrawing support or protection from, and it's understood in the sense of having been exposed or abandoned, or after he was exposed or abandoned. Of course, God directed in the timing and place of Moses being abandoned. Do you suppose Amram and his wife directed where that baby should be placed, knowing that Pharaoh's daughter might very well be coming along? Maybe it's because God told him to put it there. I don't know, but that's where that baby got placed. What did you do when you were 3 months old? What choices did you get? Not a whole lot. Nobody asked me what I wanted. Pharaoh's daughter took him up where him is baby Moses, and Pharaoh's daughter took him up for herself, or claimed him for herself. It just so happened within the will of God that Pharaoh's daughter came on the scene at that exact time. You know, you were born at the exact time of God's choosing, which means that you were conceived at the exact time of God's choosing. And here you are today, however old you are, at the exact time of God's choosing. And nourished him, where him is the baby Moses, brought him up or reared him and trained him for her own son, for herself, for a son, or for a son for herself. According to verse 22, Moses was well educated and competent in speech and in things he did. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. Moses was educated. In all the wisdom of the Egyptians suggests that Moses was provided the best training the Egyptians could offer. And was mighty. He was competent, skilled, or adept in words and in deeds. And when combined with mighty, competent, skilled, or adept, suggests in speeches, in expressing himself, in oratorical abilities, or the things which display themselves in actions of any kind, in the sense of in deeds or in actions. According to verse 23, when Moses was 40 years old, 40, that's even older than Jesse, he visited the Israelites with the intention of being helpful to them. When he was a full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. Why do you suppose that came into his heart? Because God planted it in there. And continues the thought, it's that same transitional word. When he was a full 40 years old is when he was 40 years of age. It came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. This arose upon his heart, suggested, entered his mind. You do know in Hebrew thinking, the heart is the place of thought, okay? Not the emotional thing that we have in our day and age. He would have said back then, I love you with all my bowels, instead of I love you with my whole heart, all right? I can see my wife just loving me to tell her that I love her with all my bowels. Yeah, right. Yuck. That's just not the way we would think, is it? But we understand with my whole heart, yet my heart's a blood-pumping organ. We know what it means. But times have changed and expressions have changed. Came into his heart to visit his brothers. It suggests entered his mind, began to think about visiting his brothers, the sons of Israel, with the idea of being of help to them. Why do you suppose it came into Moses' heart to visit his fellow Israelites at this exact time? It's because it was God's will. Why do you suppose that good things come into your heart at the exact time they do? Might it be because it's God's will? In verse 24, we're only going to go through 25, so be careful. We will get you out of here before 2 o'clock. In 24, Moses came to the aid of an Israelite and killed the Egyptian who was oppressing the Israelite. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. Seeing is understood in conjunction with defended, and its tense indicates that its action occurred before or at the same time as the action of defended. It's understood in the sense of after or when he saw or noticed, or simply in the sense of he saw or noticed one of them, where them has been supplied by the translators in reference to the Israelites, is someone or somebody suffer wrong, being unjustly treated. He defended him. That's Moses defended this one who was suffering wrong. He came to the aid of him. He helped him. He assisted him. And he avenged him that was oppressed. This is understood with defended. It's literally he brought about justice or punishment. It means that he saw to it that justice was done. Now, we don't know what that Egyptian was doing to the Israelites, but he wasn't planning on this being his last day on planet Earth, but it was. Him that was oppressed is for the one being oppressed or mistreated, and smote the Egyptian. It's understood in conjunction with avenged. And its tense indicates that its action occurred at the same time as the action of avenged. It's been translated as showing effect in addition to avenged. It may instead be understood in the sense of by smiting, by striking, or by slaying the Egyptian, the one who was mistreating the Israelites, or in the sense of when he smote, when he struck, or when he slew. It is used of physically striking a blow in the sense of struck or hit. In this context, it speaks of a blow that kills in the sense of struck down or slew. Why do you suppose that Moses just happened on this situation at this exact time when this Egyptian was mistreating this Israelite? Might it have been God's specific will for Moses? Might things you come upon in your life also be God's will for your life as he directs you? Of course, God controls the circumstances in your life and uses things you experience to direct you. According to verse 25, we'll end with that one so you can relax. It won't be 2 o'clock. When Moses expected that the Jews would understand that God would use him to deliver Israel, they did not understand. This is an interesting verse. He's 40 years old. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them. This is 40 years before God would send him back to do this. But he had this idea. Do you sometimes think of things that God might be directing you to do in the future? Or even now? You might. I have. How that? But they didn't understand. They wouldn't comprehend. God would eventually deliver them. God would give them deliverance by his hand. But he's going to have to wait another 40 years to get this done. Through his hand, he would deliver the Israelites from their Egyptian bondage. He knew this in advance 40 years earlier. He was actually right, but had to wait another 40 years for it to happen. Even at the age of 40 years, somehow Moses was aware that he was God's chosen man to deliver the Israelites from their Egyptian bondage, but it was not yet time for him to do it. Remember something, God's timing is always exact in your life, just as it was in Moses' life. But they understood not. They refers to the Jewish peoples. They did not understand or comprehend. But anyway, he did deliver them, the one man. The Lord willing, next week we will continue with Stephen's defense of Christianity as the one and only way of worshiping God, rather than with Stephen defending himself against the charges made against him. And of course, the way we determine what Christianity is supposed to be is by a proper understanding of the Bible. Remember that as God directed Moses in his life, including the timing of various events, he also directs your life and mine. He led you here this morning, didn't he? Why? Perhaps to sing the songs we sang, perhaps to hear this message, perhaps to make me happy. Whatever, God brought you here. You thought you came on your own. I think differently. I think you're here because God wanted you to be here, and he arranged it so that you would come. He put the desire in your heart to be here, and even if it wasn't in your heart, it might have been in your mom's or dad's, okay? You're here. Always be aware of God's working in your life to bring his word results to pass, and always be submissive to him. Be asking God what is it that you're trying to teach me in this situation? What is it that God is trying to teach you by being in this service this morning? And ask God, help me to learn it and profit from it. Let's pray together. Our Father, thank you that we have the privilege of studying thy word. And help us, our Father, always to pay attention to it and properly understand it in its context. I ask God that you will bless and direct as we continue. In Jesus' name, amen.